Good afternoon, Nevada shooters. Welcome back to another amazing episode of Armed Nevada Radio. Holy cow.
Whoa.
Well, I'm trying to wrap my head around something because for those of you that are rabid listeners, you know that you're listening to this tape delayed. So right now, try and wrap your head around this. It's Saturday afternoon, about 3:07 p.m.
As our listeners are listening to it.
However, get in your Mr. Peabody time machine. It is actually 10 a.m. on the nose on Friday, November 11th,
September 11th.
Oh, my God. That's how my week has been.
Yeah.
September 11th. How could I forget that?
Where were you when you found out what was going on?
I was getting my oil changed at the Firestone Center right there on South Virginia Street near Meadowood Mall. And I was waiting in the lobby and saw they had the TV on. And,
yeah.
And all of a sudden I see the Tower 1 burning.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? And I'm watching, like, oh my God, holy crap, look at that fire. And then right there on live TV, there comes a second airliner and it crashed into Tower 2. And I remember grabbing my phone and calling home and saying, the United States has just been attacked and you better get ready because I know I'm getting deployed.
Yeah.
And 3 months later, I was in Afghanistan.
I was still in bed. I was going to school, so I slept in that morning. And I remember a friend called and was screaming over the phone that we were under attack and that the Pentagon was on fire. And I don't know that you can explain, I was trying to explain to my kids because they, my oldest was 1 year old when this happened, mm-hmm. and my youngest wasn't even born yet. And I don't know if you've run into this with your kids. I feel like it's almost impossible to explain to them the feeling of turning on the TV and watching those things happen and feeling like, because remember that day, there was rumors of things happening.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it felt like the end of the world in some ways because of the way they talked about there's planes missing. We don't know where this airliner is. We don't know what's going to happen next. We're deploying fighters. I remember over Sacramento where I lived at the time. I mean, we saw fighters fly over all day and, thinking, well, the other shoe is going to drop any moment. Mm-hmm. I remember filling up with gas in the cars. I remember stockpiling some food thinking, this is it. It's World War III is about ready to start. And I don't know how, I try to explain that to my kids and I show them the pictures and show them the videos. And I really think like society now has been desensitized, especially those that weren't old enough to comprehend what was going on. The absolute shock and fear that happened that day.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you look at every movie. I mean, everybody calls it destruction porn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every movie is a 9/11 type of, they show people running from the plume in movies.
Right.
And like my kids, I don't know if they'll ever understand the gravity of that day.
Probably
the same way
not.
That you and I do.
No, because they weren't there to experience it the way you and I were as adults that understand world events and we understand what's going on. I took a moment this morning. Our two oldest daughters had already gone off to middle school and the one in high school. So I was getting ready to take Olivia and Bryson to school this morning. And I called Olivia into the kitchen. I said, hey, why don't you guys take a seat for a minute? And I sat them down and I asked them, I said, do you know what day it is today? Oh, yeah, it's Friday. I said, well, what's the date today? September 11th. And I asked him, I said, what's special about that day? Well, Bryson didn't know. I mean, he's 8 and I wouldn't really expect him to. Olivia's 11 and she said, well, this is the day that we were attacked. The two towers in New York City were attacked by airliners. And I started to explain what 9/11 meant.
Yeah.
And what it meant to me personally and, exactly what happened and the number of lives that were lost. We lost, like 3,300 people in those two towers that day, counting the people in the towers, the firefighters, law enforcement officers.
Right.
We've lost an additional 5,500 plus in Iraq where I was, and we've lost another almost close to that in Afghanistan. So we've lost 13,000 plus lives, 14,000 lives since 9/11.
Yeah.
And it's always difficult for me to talk about because for me personally, I saw it on the news and then I experienced the sights and the smells and the fear and the horror of Afghanistan and Iraq. And it's always very difficult for me to talk about, especially to my kids. I can't talk about it without getting emotional. I can't relate to them what the experience is because it's still very real for me. And I explained to them, you know, the man that I was on the morning of 9/11 at about 8 o'clock in the morning, that man ceased to exist.
Yeah.
And the person that I am today, be it for better or for worse, was born on that day.
Yep.
And my life will never be the same. I will never be the same because of it. And, you know, I count myself lucky because I came home.
Right.
You know, how many other guys did, 10,000 of our fellow soldiers, airmen, Marines, sailors, didn't come home from that conflict?
Here's maybe, I think, one of the challenges in our society right now is that it profoundly changed some of those of you that served. It profoundly changed law enforcement and firefighting and EMS. And for those of us like myself who maybe aren't first responders or military, but pay attention, I feel like it profoundly changed me as well, you know, because part of the reason I strap a gun on every day, every morning, is that, you know, now we're dealing with lone wolf attacks. We're not dealing with 9/11s. And you and I were just talking before we came on the show that I think we're either dealing with lone wolf or we're dealing with something huge. And either way...
Well, we're going to deal with something huge. There are no doubts in my mind at all that we will get hit again. And it'll be by both. It'll be by lone wolf, and there's going to be a large-scale attack. This isn't going to end.
And both of those scenarios require, I think, gun owners to be prepared, to be ready, to know how to use their tool.
Yes.
And in this case, that's a firearm. But I feel like it absolutely changed the way I view the world and the way I conduct myself.
Well, and I think for those of us like you that are keenly aware of current events and world events and you pay attention, and there's many, many more like you out there, absolutely it changed you. It changed you in just as great a manner as it changed any of us that were there and went outside the wire. And that's a good thing, because I'll tell you, I was reading a Facebook post from a good buddy of mine who works for one of the private security companies that I train, and he's working at the DMV this morning.
Yeah.
And at 8:15 a.m., they held a moment of silence for 9/11. And he said it took a while for him to get the, you know, 500 people standing in line at the DMV to get their registration done. It took him a while to get them to quiet down and show some respect.
Yeah.
He said after that happened, he said he was approached by a guy that goes, what happened on 9/11? What was that all about?
Unbelievable.
What happened to never forget?
Yeah.
Do you remember the days immediately following 9/11? How many American flags did you see flying from people's vehicles?
Homes. Do you remember trying to get one in the month after 9/11? It was impossible. I remember, I think I paid $25 for a cheap, you know, just so that, you know, and in addition to the ones we already had. It was unbelievable.
I saw a small one this morning sticking out of a telephone pole. After I dropped my kids off at school, somebody just placed it there randomly.
Yeah.
I fly a flag outside my house every single day.
Yeah.
I fly that flag, and it'll never come down. Not as long as I'm alive.
Good.
That flag will never come down. And it just, it's incredibly, what's the word I'm looking for? Hurtful doesn't even begin to describe it for me personally.
It's appalling how quickly went back to
things are never going to be normal.
Yeah.
Never. I'm 53 years old. I look back to the life that I had in this country 30 years ago. All right? 40 years ago when I was a teenager. It's not the same America. Mm-hmm. This is not the America that I grew up in. You know, I was 2 months old, August, September, October. I was 2 months old when during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah,
I was alive during the Vietnam War. Despite those events in this country, I've never seen such chaos in this nation that we see today, and it's because of 9/11. And I'm telling you, these are the end days. You want to call me crazy? You want to call me paranoid? Go ahead. I know what I know, and if you look at biblical prophecy, if you sit down and take a minute to read the Bible, these are the end days. Now, whether it happens in our lifetime, I don't know, because, you know, Christ is going to come like a thief in the night. It may be in our lifetime. It may be in our kids' lifetime. It may be tomorrow.
Aside from the faith perspective, though, I mean, you look at our republic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, freedoms are under attack from every direction. Our Second Amendment being one of them, First Amendment. I mean, you look at the size of the role of the state in our lives has gotten larger. I'm reading a book right now that, you know, we talked about before we came on the air. It's called 1 Second Later, mm-hmm. about an EMP attack. And anybody that doesn't know what I'm talking about, please Google it. It will...
Electromagnetic pulse.
It will terrify you. But, you know, in that book, it talked about how, for the most part, this generation coming up is going to be the weakest generation. And I still think there's very strong people in the generation, but I'm kind of worried about the country going
forward. It's up to us, those of us that live through it, to not let people forget. That's the big thing.
Yep.
We're up against a break. We've got a lot to talk about today. We hope to cover all of it. Probably won't, but we'll hit the high points today, and we'll be back right after this break. You're listening to Ben and Gary on Armed Nevada Radio. Gary on Armed Nevada Radio. And you're back with Ben and Gary on KNews 107.3 Armed Nevada Radio. We've got a video coming up. Ben's going to intro. I haven't seen it.
It's a good segue, given our first segment that, you know, where we talked about 9/11. Should I intro it?
Yeah, go ahead. All right. What's this? I haven't seen it yet. I've only heard about it.
So Marcus Luttrell,
American hero,
absolutely good American. So Marcus Luttrell, for those of you that don't know, was a
U.S. Navy SEAL,
right? Who was, you know, if you've seen Lone Survivor, that was a portrayal of him. And he did a commercial for the NRA. And this commercial is, I think it's amazing. And I thought we should listen to it.
I've heard it's one of those powerful videos.
I know you're watching, so pay attention. You hate my freedom, my religion, and my country. You hate me for speaking my mind. You try to control me with violence and intimidation. You think you can muzzle me with fear? Don't ever confuse me for my politicians or my media. I am an American, free-born and free-bred. And I will call you out for who you are. An Islamic extremist who would kill me for my beliefs. You don't intimidate me. My freedom is more powerful than anything you can possibly do. And I will never, never surrender my rights to your terror. I will say what I think, worship according to my beliefs, and raise my children how I see fit. And I defend it all with the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. I cower to no one, because I am the National Rifle Association of America, and I am freedom's safest place.
Holy cow.
Holy hell.
Right? Goosebumps through that whole thing.
I'm screaming inside right now. That is incredible. Good for him. God bless him.
Well, so, you know, not only was it a great plug for the Second Amendment,
right,
but it said everything that I think you and I and many others in this country have been saying or want to say.
Should say. That we should be saying. Every American should be standing up and saying that.
Pretty awesome commercial, I thought.
Listen, this threat that we face right now from Islamic terrorism, and I'm not afraid to call it what it is, it's Islamic extremism, is far greater, in my opinion, as an amateur student in history, than Nazi domination of Europe in World War II, Japanese imperialism in the Pacific. You know, we stopped them cold. And you know how we did it? Young men with guns did it. You put a gun in a young man's hand, you put them on a beach, and they took care of business.
Well, without fear of political correctness or...
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't say enough about that video right there. You know, first of all, the NRA needs that.
Absolutely.
They're getting just vilified and raped in the media.
Always. And what continually kills me about that, because, you know, I've seen it this week. Oh, you know, they're the evil gun lobby and this and that. They're not the gun lobby. They're those of us gun owners that contribute money to this group to be our voice in Washington, mm-hmm. to be our voice in Carson City, which unfortunately I don't think has been very strong lately.
No.
And I don't agree with everything that the NRA stands for or does, because there's a lot of boneheaded things. You know, they ignore open carry as an issue. They ignore certain concealed carry issues. But as a whole, you know, who is pushing back against these liberal mush brain billionaires out there that are spending their money with absolute disabandon? You look at I'm drawing a blank now. Bloomberg, for one. Bill Gates.
Doomberg.
You know, all of those guys are willing to spend their billions to fight to take away our rights, which absolutely murders me. The fact that these rich people, who I would guarantee are protected by armed individuals,
are
fighting and spending money so that they can take away the very right that they enjoy from us.
Here's a question. Does Bloomberg, I know Bloomberg has an armed security detail.
Yeah.
Does he employ them himself or as a former governor or mayor? Was he mayor of New York?
Mayor of New York
or
City.
Or as a former mayor of New York, is he provided like the president or even after you're out of office, you get Secret Service protection?
Well, I think what happened is he actually offered the detectives that were on his detail from the NYPD a bailout package for their pension, and they left the NYPD to go work for him.
Oh, okay. So they're not. He doesn't have security on the taxpayers' dole.
No, not anymore. I don't think.
Good.
Ray Kelly, who is the former commissioner, you know, he was trying to get protection from the city for the rest of his life. So
on the taxpayers' dime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Ray.
Actually, speaking of New York City. So shifting gears, did you see last week the news story about the NYPD officers that fired 90 rounds?
No, but you were telling me about this a little bit off mic. And
so almost 100 rounds were fired from their service weapons.
Again?
Yeah. And this happens, I think, with unfortunate regularity. So they were going after a alleged criminal or a wanted person, and they fired 90 rounds and they grazed their subject. Didn't hit him.
How many times has this happened now? They had the one shooting in New York
Times
City.
Times Square.
This was a couple of years ago.
It was like 120 rounds.
Then they shoot three people?
Yeah.
None of them were the bad guy?
Right, exactly. Well, and I was thinking to myself, you know, so from a training perspective and from an equipment perspective, I think there's a couple of good reasons for this. One, it'd be interesting to see how many New York City police officers are hired from New York City. Where I would argue that there's probably not a very strong gun culture like there is here.
Right.
So you're hiring people that aren't necessarily experienced with guns. Then you're bringing them into the academy. How much real stress-filled training are they getting in that academy?
My guess would be probably not a whole lot.
Not enough.
You'll have an academy class of 1,000 guys.
Yeah.
I mean, their academy class is huge.
Because their force is, what, about 38,000?
It's the largest police department in the country.
And then the other thing is, their approved firearms or their approved service weapons, one of them is the Glock 19, right? And everybody would say, well, you know, how the hell could you not shoot a Glock 19 accurately? Well, they take out the trigger spring that comes from Glock, and then they put in what's called a New York 1 trigger that I think is 12 pounds.
Gah.
Can you imagine firing a striker-fired handgun with a 12-pound trigger?
No wonder they're missing, because you're not getting any your muzzle deviation is all over the clock.
Well, and the shake that probably comes
from trying to control that trigger. No wonder.
So,
well, that explains it.
I mean, how can people in New York... How can the police union not advocate for a firearm that's easier to shoot?
I don't know. They need to dump that trigger. They need to just go back to a factory Glock trigger. Why? Let me ask you this. Why would they switch out triggers? What's the reason?
Actually, this is a good discussion for us because it touched on something I don't think we talked about a couple weeks ago. Did you see that the Los Angeles Sheriff's Office was reporting that they had a 300% increase in negligent discharges since they switched to the M&P firearm versus their old Beretta 92?
I saw that.
Well, you know, you and I were talking about what are the reasons for that. I think, personally, I think it's that they got lazy, and with the 92, they could rest their finger on the trigger when they draw their firearm, and with a heavy double action... You know, it takes a concerted effort to pull the trigger. So what I think was happening is they'd draw their firearm, the finger would go on the trigger, they'd acquire their target, and then they would pull.
Well, the factory M&P trigger on that particular handgun, if they're carrying a full-size 9mm 40 or 45 M&P, I don't know what caliber they're shooting, but either way, any of those three triggers on those full-size M&Ps are just mush. It's one of the worst triggers, and I have an M&P, a full-size M&P, and I swapped out the trigger. I put an Apex Duty Tactical trigger in it because it's a much shorter pull and a much crisper break, but it's still 4.5 pounds. So it's a half a pound off a factory trigger without all that mush.
Well, so here's the problem for police departments. if you go to the Los Angeles, where, and I would say, what, 90% of police departments in this country, if you go to a striker fire handgun, you have got to change the way you train people,
mm-hmm.
that they cannot rest that finger on that trigger, or else they're going to have a negligent discharge.
Well, that's just common sense anyway.
Right. Well, but then if you go to the New York style trigger, or if you're one of those police departments that's holding out with a double single, and you know you're relying on that double action, you're resting your finger on the trigger, then you're going to have dealing with accuracy issues, like New York,
right?
So you either go with a heavy trigger and you have accuracy issues, and I would say liability issues.
Well, here's the thing with New York: you've got a massive trigger on that gun,
12 pounds,
12-pound trigger. That's just short of a trigger pull on any revolver,
right?
So 12 pounds is an insane trigger pull on a semi-auto, especially on a Glock.
Yeah.
So you've got a massive trigger pull on that gun. Plus, you do that under stress, and if you're slapping the trigger on a 12-pound trigger pull, I guarantee you that muzzle is going from 6 to 12 every single time.
Right.
Because you're just having to jerk that thing to get that trigger to break.
And if you don't have – yeah, I think if I remember right, the NYPD qualifies once a year.
Probably.
So I guarantee a lot of those officers have once a year trigger time.
God. And where are you going to go in New York to train with your gun?
And you know what? Well, besides the police academy?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking to myself, if I had a 12-pound trigger that I only shot once a year – how accurate would I be with it? I wouldn't be.
No, you wouldn't be.
It'd be horrible.
That I think that explains the why they fired 90 rounds,
right,
and hit, it grazed the bad guy once. They're lucky they didn't strike anybody else like the last shooting they had. So, all righty, we're going to hit on some other really cool things. We got a couple stories about somebody hiding a gun in their hoo-ha and some other great stuff. So we're going to get to that right after the break.
Hoo-ha?
I said hoo-ha. We're going to explain that in a little bit. You're going to be right back with Ben and Gary, KNews 107.3, Armed Nevada Radio. All right, and we're back. I want to go over a story here. This is actually kind of funny. Routine traffic stop in Waco, Texas. This was a couple Mondays ago. Led to the discovery of a large drug stash inside a vehicle, and an even, well, I don't want to say larger stash hidden somewhere else.
Wait for it.
A loaded handgun inside the female suspect's hoo-ha. She had a, I don't know if you saw the picture of it. It was a small, it was a Saturday, what you call Saturday night special.
Yeah.
I don't even know what make it was. It looked like it had been carved out of a piece of rock.
It looked like one of the old 25 autos
Small 25 auto or 22 caliber, just a little small semi-automatic that she had secreted up in her hoo-ha. And I don't want to hear any holster jokes on Facebook.
What's scary is the cop arrested her, patted her down.
Yeah.
Put her in the back of the patrol car, and she admitted it halfway through the ride.
She
did. Can you imagine that cops? I mean, my heart would have been down.
I'll tell you why she admitted that. She had a conscience pang, because here's what we do. Whenever we make a dope arrest like that,
yeah,
we'll tell them, listen, you got any dope hidden somewhere? You're not supposed to have it. You got it keistered. You have it up your hoo-ha. Where do you have it?
Right.
Because if you take it into the jail,
they're going to find it.
They're going to find it, and it's an additional felony charge. So
right.
Then it's too late. So she's like, you know what? There's no way they're going to find this gun in my vagine. So she gets in the car and goes, oh, you know what? Maybe I need to rethink this. I guarantee that's what happened. And she goes, hey, deputy, I've got this gun hidden in my girl parts. And that's when they got her to the jail. And we found some wild stuff hidden in people's private parts of the jail.
So I understand that, she's a criminal and criminals, don't.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? That highlights something I've noticed this week. I don't know how many of the gun blogs you subscribe to. There has been a crap ton of stories about retarded gun owners who, in my opinion, don't deserve to be gun owners, not using holsters or using holsters that weren't right for their guns.
Oh, really? I haven't seen any of this.
Oh. And you know
example?
What? This is part of our, you and I needing to, or I think our community as a whole, calling out these stupid negligent gun owners.
Is there a name?
No. Well, so like here's one. Concealed carrier. I'm waiting for it to pull up. It's all whenever we're on the air, the phone never works.
Right.
Concealed carrier gets caught in theater after dropping his firearm.
That happened here in Sparks
a
couple years ago.
A man with a valid concealed carry permit was escorted out of the theater following a patron reporting someone handling a firearm. And so he retrieved his pistol after it fell out of the holster. You know what? For the love of God, people. here, if you're listening to this, you're within, you know, driving distance of LAG Tactical or JM Custom Kydex or any of the other
Cabela's,
amazing
Shields,
holster makers. Go, if you're going to spend $400, $500, $600 on a gun, seriously, what the hell? Go buy a holster that fits that gun.
What was his holster? A paper cup?
I don't know. It doesn't say. I would really like to know. And then there was another one here, and let me see if I can find it. There was like three of them this week where people not using holsters or not using the right holster. And it's like, you know what? Is it? Oh, there was one where a guy was babysitting and adjusting his firearm, handling his firearm, and it went off and it struck the person he was babysitting.
Oh, my God.
Seriously, people. Like,
leave the gun in the damn holster.
Right.
There. We get it. Okay?
You and I right now, we're both using holsters that we've had, Kydex holsters that we got from local makers.
We are both armed right now.
Right.
As we always are in the studio.
And there is no possible way that my firearm will fall out of that holster or go off while it's in that holster because it's been molded to that firearm.
Yep.
And it is of a material that cannot be collapsed.
Short of my compact 1911 growing condor wings, it's not coming out of the holster unless I pull it out.
What is so damn hard about this topic for people?
You know what? Because you have you have a generation of guys like us that are gear sensitive, that we take responsibility for how we carry our guns, and then you've got a whole segment of society here in Northern Nevada that just, you know what? I'm going to carry because I can carry. Fine. Yes, you have that right. I get it.
Right.
But they don't take it any farther than that. So they shove a gun in their waistband or they find some garbage, and I'm going to call it out, garbage Uncle Mike's nylon piece of crap.
Or they just put it in their damn pocket.
Or they put it in their pocket. You know, and that's how they wear. You know what? If you're going to carry a gun, oh my, be responsible.
I wish
carry it properly because it is your responsibility to keep that gun in the holster.
Absolutely.
And not allow anybody else to get access to it.
You know what? This community is fun. We have a great time. We enjoy ourselves when we go out shooting. And, you know, I'm a little bit of a gear junkie. You know, I love to get in new stuff. But you know what? Never, ever, ever forget about the fact that this is like a life and death thing that we carry around attached to our belts. You know what? That bullet can't be recalled.
Nope.
And you can hurt someone.
Yeah, this gun is not a toy. It's not a showpiece. It's not meant to intimidate. It's not meant to show off or to prove who's got the bigger set of stones than the next guy.
Well,
these guns are designed to kill people,
right,
to tear flesh, crush bones,
it's
liquefy
innards.
It's
a serious responsibility.
Right.
So I'm getting all fired up. You know what? We talk about this pretty frequently. I'm going on another trip. I almost feel like it should be a segment. Where in the world is
Ben
going?
Where is Ben going?
Well, so I'm going up to Idaho, God's country up there, to visit some family. And
Hashtag potato.
And my dad booked the flight. You know, God bless him, paying for my way up there. I appreciate it, Dad. But he booked it through Sacramento. Damn it.
Okay. You're not carrying.
Well, okay.
You better buy 10-round mags.
My permit is good in Idaho, right?
Right.
And I love carrying in Idaho because you can carry just about everywhere. They have campus carry. It's fantastic, right? But so by going through Sacramento now, I can't take any of my full capacity magazines.
We talked about this.
I know we did.
And here was my solution. And I think it's a good solution.
Actually, all right. So say your solution. If it's what I think it is, I don't think it's legal.
My solution is, you take your high-capacity magazines, you unload them, and you mail them, FedEx, second-day FedEx them to your dad, go get some 10-round mags, throw a 10-round mag in your gun.
Yep.
That way, at least when you get off the plane, you got something to carry. And, you know,
all right.
Put your ammo in the locked case with the...
Well,
with a gun.
So that option is legal, but dude, it sounds like a logistical nightmare because if my stuff gets lost, then I got to go somewhere to my grandparents live up in Timbuktu, Idaho, where I'm not kidding. There's like 40 people that live in the town they live in. It's way disconnected. It's on a gravel road from Cascade. So there's no guarantee that if I FedEx it up there, it's going to be there waiting for me. So, you know, we talked about, you said, why don't you take your magazines apart and just transport them as parts. Well, it turns out that's not legal anymore.
Oh, it isn't?
No.
Oh, here's something we didn't think about either. You know, we're talking about this on the air.
Yeah.
And if there's any TSA or NSA listening, You know that when you get to the airport,
oh,
they are going to be climbing up your pooper with a flashlight and a search warrant.
I know it. Well,
you're going to get the four S's of death on your boarding pass.
So I'm going to have to buy 10-round magazines for either my HK or my Walther's. Damn it.
Just
they're so expensive. For magazines that I will not use when I come back.
It's a secure feeling to have the high-cap mags. Right. You're not going to use them when you come back. But if you ever do travel again, you've got them. If you you can't. I was going to say California, but that's not an option for you. You know, if you ever do travel again, you have them. And
right.
You know what? Are you going to listen? Are you going to, as a private gun owner caring for self-defense, are you going to fire 10 rounds during a self-defense shooting? Probably not. You're going to go 2 to 5, and that's going to end it, if you even have to shoot at all. I mean, you may draw down, and the guy goes, oh, I don't want any of this, and he's gone.
That just irritates the crap out of me.
Well,
I got to spend $75
Why should you have to? Really? Why shouldn't you just be able to throw your mags in there? I mean, look, you could chance it.
I'm not, no.
9 times out of 10, TSA is not going to open that box up.
Yeah.
Except this will be the 10th time.
Well, and that's, one, we're public figures now,
TSA, why don't you start catching real terrorists? Oh, I'm sorry, you haven't caught any yet.
Well, no, but, the thing, TSA is not my biggest fear. It's that, most airports I go to, there is an airport police officer or a municipal police officer that is assigned to the airport that will stand over that bag, and I guarantee you they would love to knock out a Nevada resident with a high-capacity magazine.
My experience traveling is no single TSA entity at any airport is on the same page.
No.
They must. I swear to God, they probably have about 100 different policies.
Oh, well,
that they operate off of.
I don't know how much you travel with your firearm, but I travel all the time with mine. And I'm not kidding. Reno, Salt Lake, Boise. Where else have I flown out of with my firearm? Minneapolis, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Arizona, or Phoenix. All of those airports do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And they all claim they do it the same. And I'm like, you guys don't.
No, they don't.
Some of them take you back to this vault-like room where they have a cop standing over you with the TSA agent. And at one of the airports, the TSA agent asked me to open the slide. Like, I'm not picking that gun up. No way.
What are you nuts?
Because all I need is for that door to open, some stranger to look in and go, someone's got a gun in the airport. And I trigger a lockdown and, get drawn out at gunpoint. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Hey, I remember years ago, when I deployed, we were flying out of Reno.
Yeah.
They made us open up the cases, pull the M16s out, and rack the bolts at the ticket counter.
No way.
That was insanity. All right, we're going to be right back. We're going to wrap the show up here pretty quick. You're listening to Ben and Gary, KNews 107.3, ARM Nevada Radio. And we're back. This is our last segment today on ARM Nevada Radio. Listen to Ben and Gary on KNews 107.3.
You know what? This hour goes by too fast.
It does. When we first started the show, what do we do every week?
Dude, we prep the hell out of the show.
We'd meet at Starbucks. We'd go to Chipotle. We'd prep the show.
Right.
Now, I'm in here like 15 minutes before we go to tape, and I'm like writing down notes. Like, what are we going to do?
It's better because it's conversational.
It is.
And
it
you just said Chipotle. I'm hungry now.
I know. I can't hit Chipotle with you today. I got to go grab the little one from daycare.
I
dropped her off, and she was sad. My heart's broken. So
I got to go pick up a shipment of holsters from LAG to photograph for them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right on. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Making moves.
I'm waiting to get my... Hey, Russ, where's my gun, buddy? I'm waiting to get my gun back. I tease him because I know he's doing a good job.
Right.
The guy does phenomenal work, but he's working on my Glock. I need it back. I'm going to that school here on October 3rd. It's going.
Time flies.
NRA law enforcement said, hey, the school's going. So I need that gun for that class.
I remember talking about that around the 4th of July, thinking, oh, that'll be so long before that gets here.
I can't wait because there are so many things that I want to do this year with my business. I've given up the PILB side, the Private Investigator License Board side. I'm not doing armed guard stuff anymore. I won't be teaching for them. I've passed that on to a very competent instructor, a guy by the name of John Glather with Semper Firearms.
Yeah.
The guy's, he's great. He's a phenomenal instructor. I'm absolutely confident he's going to take care of those guys. But I want to concentrate and focus on more specialized training. I'm kind of revamp the way I do concealed carry a little bit. Not that I'm going to lessen it, but I just say I'm going to refocus. I don't want to say too much just yet.
You know what? You're talking about the armed guard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think next week we're going to talk about my interactions with Nevada Highway Patrol.
We've been saying that. Are you ready to do that?
Yeah, because the criminal case is closed. Okay. I've satisfied all the stuff that... and when I say criminal case, it's going to make me sound like I'm a felon. No, it was a traffic case. Right. But the state, because of the nature of the traffic stop, I swear extorted money from me.
Sure they did.
And we're going to talk a little bit about what happened with a certain Nevada highway patrolman.
Is that internal investigation completed?
I don't know. But you know what? That's the thing. They won't tell me. So screw it. We're going to talk about it.
Well, have you been told you can't?
No.
Well, there you go.
So...
there you go.
Yeah, we're going to talk about
and,
it.
You know, we're not doing this to besmirch law enforcement because, you know, I come from that world. I'm here to tell you there are the vast, vast majority of those men and women are honorable, honorable individuals.
And
however.
You know what? Nevada Highway Patrol in particular, I know some amazing guys.
Yeah. God bless those guys. They do a tough job.
That are good oath keepers.
Yeah.
And I know several that, you know, they feel like their job. They feel like they're more service providers than they are law enforcement.
I'll tell you what, even though we used to call them AAA with a badge, I'll tell you what, these guys work in the outskirts,
You know, all by themselves.
Eureka, out in the middle of nowhere. They're running on these calls, running these traffic stops alone with no cover, or their cover's 40, 45 minutes away.
I have a lot of respect for the Nevada Highway Patrol.
I do too.
But that being said, there was two state troopers that need to be called out.
Yep, and we will. And, you know, that's there. You have bad apples in any organization. We had them in Carson City. You know, we had them in Phoenix. There, no matter where you go, you're going to have some bad apples. It just happens.
And it's a good, I think it's a good lesson or a good discussion as gun owners.
Sure it is.
What to do when a traffic stop goes bad because you're...
yeah, and yours went real bad.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this real quick. This dude, I was going to use another word that started with the sound do, and I stopped myself. Started with the sound do, ended with a bag, rhymes with rubag. This guy, Dontre Mills, not exactly sure where this happened. I don't have the location. Here in the U.S., Dontre Mills purchased 27 guns using false ID and then sold those guns to felons.
Wait, what?
I know. Wait for it. He purchased guns with a false ID, passed a NICS background check with a false ID, bought 27 of these guns, then went back out on the street.
But there's laws against perjuring yourself.
I know. Well, here's some more. Sold those guns to felons, to his fellow gang members.
Okay.
He walks the street a free man today. You know why?
Yeah.
Because after being charged with 55 counts of federal gun trafficking crimes...
uh-huh.
Barack Obama's Department of Justice, under Eric Holder's supervision at that time, negotiated a plea bargain in exchange for a guilty plea on one charge. Dontre Mills got probation and is out there today.
You know what?
Tell me again, Ben. Tell me again. How's the NRA the problem?
Well, Eric Holder should be in jail right now.
He's a D-bag.
He should be. Well, he's treasonous. And the fact that this administration continues their war against lawful gun ownership and those of us that follow the rules to the letter and then ignores the fact that this administration has trafficked guns to Mexico that have gotten law enforcement officers killed, that have gotten people from the State Department killed, and then we've got Eric Holder inciting race riots and then looking the other way as people are trafficking in firearms. There's no excuse for this.
This entire administration is treasonous from the top on down, from Barack Obama to Eric Holder to Hillary Clinton to anybody that worked in the State Department under Hillary Clinton.
And we don't
Valerie Jarrett.
We don't need more gun control. We just need the – you know, I'm trying to like make sure I don't drop a word I can't on the radio. But we need to just adhere and prosecute the things that are already on the books, not passing more gun control laws. You know, and actually this goes hand in hand with that story that we talked about this week where under the guise of public health, they did a study of 100 Cook County prisoners or, you know, people that are in the Cook County jail. And they found that of those that they sampled, and I think it's a little bit of a flawed study, but all of them said they got their guns from means other than lawful gun purchases. None of the 100
Shocker.
That they sampled went through an FFL.
Shocker.
And none of them bought private party either. They all got them from other gang members. They all got them from family or friends.
Right. And they're getting them because the guns are stolen. They're stealing guns. They're getting them in burglaries. They're taking them from a family member.
Well, the reason I say it's flawed is what person in county jail is going to admit to a felony that could land them in federal or state prison.
Oh, they're not. They won't.
In a study.
Yeah.
So
where'd you get? You got caught with a stolen gun. Where'd you get it? Oh, I got it from a buddy of mine. I didn't know it was stolen.
But the study showed that 99% of guns that are used in crimes or being used by criminals are not being bought through the national background system.
No. So how is that? How are expanded background checks?
They're not
going to work.
Absolutely not. And you know what? You and I actually argued a little bit about this a couple weeks ago off the air. That you know what? I'm all right with doing away with background checks altogether.
Well, they're clearly not working.
There is no empirical evidence. And actually, we may get into this discussion next week as we talk with someone about gun rights and gun control.
Right. We got to make that happen.
There's no empirical evidence that shows that there has been any significant reduction in crime, or actually any reduction in crime, because of the Brady Bill background check.
No. No. Who's submitting to background checks? Lawful gun owners.
Right. Because if you're a felon and you know it, you're not going to go through
exactly.
A
because guns are too
check.
Easy to obtain otherwise. You get, listen, the criminal element will find a way to get the guns. They're out there. Making it harder for guys like you and I to get them is not going to reduce crime, period.
I just read an article about the explosion of zip guns in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
They're home built. So in Australia, they don't have, besides 22s and shotguns, they basically don't have any gun ownership.
Australians are great at two things. Mad Max movies.
Fast cars.
Mad Max, well, that's three things. Mad Max movies and making zip guns that look like they belong in Mad Max movies.
So violent crime is still an issue in Australia. And all you've done is disarm lawful gun owners and made them victims. Because the criminals are still going to find a way to terrorize, whether it's through a knife, a machete, or a zip gun.
You know, I agree. Something has to be done. There is an explosion of gun violence in this country.
But it's not gun control that
has to be done. Gun control's not going to do it because criminals simply are not. The people that are getting their hands on guns and committing violent crimes are not going to be deterred by any measure that you can put forth. It's a, for the gun control advocates, it's a feel-good measure. Oh, my, look, they wave their banner. Their banner of self-righteousness. Look what we did. We took up the standard.
Right.
Yeah, crap.
Well, the newscaster death.
Mm-hmm. The Virginia shooting.
Yeah. So they're trying to use that now as a means to forward gun control.
Okay. And how would gun control have worked in that situation?
It wouldn't have because the guy...
He bought a gun with a background check.
Oh, yeah. Well, and not only that, but, the father is on the news crying. No. And my heart goes out to him. He lost his daughter, right? And I'm not trying to make light of that. But at the same time, this guy has an axe to grind. He was a gun control advocate before his daughter died, and now he's an emotional one after his daughter died.
Right.
And
now it's personal and now it's emotional, and you always come from a bad place when you try to argue a point or defend a point based on emotions. He's too close to that issue now. And
so actually, another good segue as we're winding down here on segment four. What are we working on?
What we're working on is you watching the Discovery Channel on November 8th. November 8th on Discovery Channel, Sunday.
I don't want to see you naked.
I want to say 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Nevada time. Yours truly, Gary Underhill, will be on Naked and Afraid.
I don't want to see you naked.
My episode airs. Get ready to see a side of me that very few literally have ever seen before. And what I mean by that is, unless you're Sean Patrick, and this is going to be one of the highlights of your life, seeing my naked arse on... Sean, was that the number one you just threw up there?
Yep.
You are number one, and actually, you're number two.
So get ready to watch that. Here we go, guys. This has been a great show. Ben, as always, it's been fun.
Absolutely.
And guys, shooters, stay safe out there. Stay armed. And in closing, Ben, what do you got?
Just continue to advocate for our lifestyle and try to educate those that don't understand what we do.
That's it. You've listened to Ben and Gary, Armed Nevada Radio, KNews 173. We'll see you next week. Bye.